Welcome back, guys. DJ SM KMOX 305. Hot day today and tomorrow. Then tomorrow, the storms kick in, which Dave Murray will tell you about in about 30 minutes. And cool us back down for next weekend. Our buddy, attorney Chad Pleben, joins us. We're going to talk about Donald Trump on trial. We're going to talk about the red light cameras. Chad, welcome back to the show.
Hello, Dave. How are you?
Good. So let's do what we usually do. I'll tell you what I think I know about the Trump trial, and then you tell me where I go askew. So Donald Trump denies everything. He denies everything with Stormy Daniels, but the case basically turns on, as I understand it, that there is evidence that he paid her hush money to keep quiet, to protect his marriage, which is not illegal. But the timing of it right before the election gave the prosecuting attorney what they needed to say, this is not a misdemeanor, this is a felony, because you were trying to, in your own way, rig the election so that people didn't find out that you had been having sex with a porn star. And a lot of legal commentators have said, this is the weakest of the cases, really kind of overreached. Never really seen this before. Where do you fall on it?
Yeah, it's a false business records case is how it initially starts. That essentially is a misdemeanor in the state of New York. It ramps up into a felony because the state now will have to prove that he had the intent to commit further or other crimes. For example, a campaign finance violation law or a tax law. And the basis for that is that in his business records, the payment, the hush money payment to Stormy Daniels was paid by Michael Cohen. And that was done 2 weeks prior to the 2016 election. He never reimburses Cohen until after he wins the presidential election. And his claim is, no, those were legitimate legal expenses, salary increases, because Michael Cohen did such a good job that I increased his salary, and he did it notwithstanding the fact that Cohen was the one, coincidentally, that paid Stormy Daniels. And by the way, it's not, to pay off hush money to an adult film star is not illegal. I mean, it happens all the time. And you can have a non-disclosure agreement where that person, can't say anything that she was paid off for whatever the reason. That's not the illegal part. The illegal part is the intent to commit other crimes, and the other crime, the campaign finance law violation or the tax law violation, that's a felony. And it happens on the eve of his trial. And it happens, right after, or not too very long after, the Access Hollywood tape, too.
So let's talk about the human element of being in a 2-month trial. So my mom recently fell and broke her hip, and I've been doing a lot of hospital time. And I always say how it's one of the most exhausting things you can do. Having tried a few cases and having second chaired many, many cases, and as you well know, there are few things more exhausting than being a part of a trial, whether you're the judge, the jury, the defendant, the prosecuting attorney, the lawyers, doesn't matter. Being that it's a criminal trial, Donald Trump has no choice. He has to be in court 4 days a week for what sounds like a couple of months. That's a tough putt. I mean, it's a tough putt for anybody, and he's not known for his patience.
Yeah, and obviously, I guess we're going to find out during the course of this trial what Judge Marchant is going to have to deal with and how he's going to behave. And obviously, how he behaves during the course of this long, very long trial will be taken into consideration by the 12 people who are seated to figure out what the facts are in this particular case. And now, obviously, what they're doing, part of that long process is selecting a jury. So they're going to have, I guess, 12 people, and I think that they're going to have 6 alternates in addition to the 12. And so part of the process now, because he's a public figure, and remember, he filed a motion for a change of venue because he doesn't believe that the people in Manhattan from which the jury will be selected are going to be exactly fair and impartial to him. The judge denied that motion for change of venue, which properly so. I mean, I filed a lot of motions for change of venue in high profile cases, some of which I won, most of which I didn't. But good judges will say, OK, I don't know. I think we can pick a jury that's fair and impartial. So let's give it a try. And if we can't succeed, then fine, we'll revisit the motion for change of venue. So I don't think he's going to get any traction with that on appeal. So now they're in the process of conducting the voir dire examination or questioning the jurors. Interestingly, he's told the jurors this trial may last, you know, 5-6 weeks, whatever it is. But the way in which they're handling it now, he's got a questionnaire of some like 32 questions that he's asking each of these individual jurors. They didn't fill out the questionnaire. He's asking those questions verbally. And he's asking initially the question of whether or not anybody thinks that for whatever reason they can't serve. And usually what will happen, people will raise their hands, particularly people that know they're going to get stuck in a jury trial for 5 or 6 weeks. You know, that's a message of I want to get out of here. And I want to get out of here in a hurry. Well, these people now have been given a chance to say that they whether they can serve or they can't serve, raise their hands. And there's not usually what will happen is the judge will then make a further inquiry. He'll look to the defense and have them make an inquiry, look to the prosecution, have them make an inquiry, and then make an ultimate decision as to whether or not that juror should be removed. In this particular case, the lawyers aren't getting a chance to do that. The judge is simply saying, OK, you basically can't serve. I guess he's going to ask him, you know, what exactly is your reason? And that's it. Then they're gone. So a lot of these people now, I think he brought in 500 people so far today. A lot of hands went up. And I think maybe 90 or 100 of those so far have raised their hands and said, you know, can't do it for whatever the reason.
I think it's really interesting that the judge is already on the record saying, hey, just so everyone understands, this has nothing to do with whether you like Donald Trump or you don't like Donald Trump. You cannot like Donald Trump and still be on this jury. You can have voted for Donald Trump twice and still be on this jury. It's about can you be impartial?
Yeah, and you can form opinions. I mean, obviously, you don't want a juror that says, well, Donald Trump, I have no idea who this guy is. I have no idea what any of this is about. That one you would eliminate for a whole bunch of different reasons. So you can have a person who says, you know, yes, I've formed an opinion. I formed an opinion about Donald Trump, generally speaking, about his politics, about whatever. The question then becomes whether or not you can set aside that opinion and make your decisions based upon the law that the court gives you and the evidence that's presented at the trial. And if you can, then you're fair game to be seated as a juror. And understand this, that jury selection, both from the standpoint of the plaintiff, standpoint of the defendant, prosecution, civil, criminal, whatever it might be, is a process of elimination. You don't pick a jury. You eliminate jurors, and then you ultimately get the 12 that are left. And the strikes that will be given at the end of the day, I think they get 10 apiece. The prosecution will get 10, the defendant will get 10, and they're peremptory strikes. And you can strike whatever you want, 10 people, because you don't like the way they parted their hair, the color, the clothes that they're wearing, whatever. It just can't be for a race or gender or national origin reason. And then you get down to your final 12 who hopefully can listen to the evidence and be fair and partial to both sides. So it'll be a challenge to get those 12, though. Chad, no question about that.
About 2 minutes left in the segment. I know that you are passionate about this red light issue. Talk us through it.
Well, the Missouri Supreme Court has already shot down red light cameras. I don't know what the bill is that is being sent now to the mayor's desk with respect to their latest what I view as a money grab on red light cameras. The last time that the case was presented to the courts, the issue was that you're driving the car and the inability to identify the actual driver of the car as the actual perpetrator of violating that particular red light. I don't know how they've gotten around that. It was very expensive, I think, to photograph not only the face of the person, but then you've got to do a lot of investigation as to, okay, unless you have some kind of facial recognition, yeah, you need to figure out who that is so that you can send the red light camera ticket to that individual. Now, maybe they've gotten around it somehow, some way. In my opinion, it's just a money grab on behalf of the city of St. Louis, and probably still is my guess.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Chad. We'll be talking to you a lot in the next couple of days.
You bet. Look forward to it.
322 DGS, Dave Murray coming up at the bottom of the hour, then Sweet 16 at the top. So Stairway to Kevin, you saw the new Civil War movie,
yeah,
which everyone's fascinated by.
Yeah.
As am I.
I saw it yesterday afternoon, and there are a couple things that I really like. I'm not getting no spoilers, nothing like that, not going to give away any plot points, but you know the premise of it is there's a civil war happening in the United States.
Yeah.
It is the thing that makes it interesting, and I think probably they did it for a lot of good reasons, but it's not about left versus right. It's not a civil war with liberals versus conservatives. It's not that.
I bet a lot of people will be disappointed in that.
I would hope not, because really the point, this is something that the director has said publicly. So this is, again, not in any way a spoiler, but if you've seen the trailers or if you've read anything about the movie, the premise is that basically the Western, Front Foundation, I forget what they called it, but basically Texas and California team up to go after a corrupt government based in D.C. Okay, but the premise that the director has put out there, Alex Garland, is things got so bad that these two states that are completely the opposite said, we got to work together to fix this problem. But outside of that, there's nothing in this movie that is like about politics. There's nothing in there that's about which viewpoint anybody espouses. Mm-hmm. It is entirely that there's this conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the root of it, that these two polar opposite states team up to solve what they think is a really big problem. And then mostly you're seeing entirely through the eyes of the war journalists that are covering it all, right? But I thought that was interesting that this is the premise. And again, not a spoiler at all because it's out there in advance. That's what the movie makers wanted to point out was this was a case where things were bad enough where the political division no longer mattered. And the reason I wanted to bring it up is what would get us to that point?
Yeah.
Because that's the fictional world that is there.
Yeah, that's
do you think
to
that
ask.
Would happen now?
No, but while you were watching a movie, knowing it was a movie, like when I watch Dracula, I'm scared, but I don't think it's plausible.
Right.
Did you think it was plausible? Were you like, I could see this happening?
Well, I mean, it's a great question because you don't. There are a lot of things that are referred to in the movie that I don't necessarily want to mention because I don't want them to be potential spoilers for anybody. But there's not a lot of specifics about what happened with the president and the government in the United in Washington, D.C. But essentially what you have is these Western forces, these two, you know, Texas and California. And then there's kind of like a separate thing going on in Florida. And then a lot of the country is just like acting like nothing's even happening. Like the middle of the country, they're just business as usual, according to, you know, the way the plot, the map kind of plays out when you mm-hmm. look at the promos for the movie, mm-hmm. right? So it's interesting that clearly whatever it is that's at the root of this civil war was serious enough for those two polar opposite states to be like, we got to work together to fix this. And that kind of was I was thinking as I was walking out is what could be not only that serious in real life, not in the movie, but in real life, what could be not only that serious, but not politically polarizing, mm-hmm. and something that the two dynamics would agree on terrible.
Is it almost just an action flick, like sort of like a zombie movie, but instead of zombies, it's Civil War?
So it's got a little bit of a road trip movie vibe. Like that's part of the plot is the journalists going to the front, going to cover mm-hmm. what's happening. So there's a little bit of road trip element to it, but then there's action. There are several. Like really intense action sequences that are really good, by the way. The action sequences are phenomenal.
Is it a spoiler to ask whether it's a conventional war?
No, it's not. That's not a spoiler. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And does that feel pretty real?
It looks good. I mean, the sound is very big in it too. Like the not only the noises but the intensity of them, the kinds of noises you're hearing, mm-hmm. The visuals. There's a lot of ugly stuff in the movie.
Did you take anything away?
Just that question. Like, what could we get to the... What would we be able to agree is so terrible that the two polar opposites would agree that we need to go do something about it?
Interesting.
That was the question that I came to. And they hint at things in the movie that I don't want to mention because, again, mm-hmm. I don't want them to be given away. But... I couldn't think of it anything in real life where the polar political opposite viewpoints would be like, yes, that thing is so bad outside of a foreign invasion, right? Outside of a foreign power invading, what could we agree on? And that was kind of annoying to think about it. And like, I can't think of an example. I can't think of a single example where everybody would go, yep, we need to work together to fix that outside of, again, a foreign invader, alien invasion, whatever.
Look forward to seeing it.
Maybe zombie apocalypse.
Yeah. Welcome back, guys. 335 DGS. Dave Murray joins us. Hello, Dave.
Hello there.
I understand you had quite a weekend, right?
Well, it was the end of the week. Why I wasn't on with you guys live Thursday and Friday is I went to Janice and I went to the Jimmy Buffett tribute concert at the Hollywood Bowl in L.A.
Super cool.
It was super cool. There's no question about it. You want to hear who played?
Yeah.
Okay. There were performers, and then there were presenters more than anything else, kind of filling between the music. Obviously, Mac McAnally, Coral Reefer Band, that they were the main band. Jake Owens, country music guy, mm-hmm. Kenny Chesney, Brandi Carlile, Sheryl Crow, Jackson Browne, Dave Matthews, Eric Church, J.D. Souther, Zach Brown, Jake Sherem Bukuro, ukulele guy, Jack Johnson, Scotty Emmerich, Carolyn Jones, Snoop Dogg, Pitbull, Dave Grohl, Paul McCartney, Bon Jovi, and the Eagles, including Don Henley and Joe Walsh.
That honestly may be the best lineup outside of like a AID concert or something.
Yeah, it was, and there was never a dull moment. It moved. It just moved. The presenters who kind of, again, filled in a little bit, total surprise to the entire audience. Woody Harrelson, Harrison Ford, Jane Fonda, Will Arnett, Don Johnson, John McEnroe, Judd Apatow, Dave Grohl was also a presenter, Pat Riley, old Lakers coach, James Taylor, Dolly Parton.
Yeah, a couple videos went viral from that, Dave, and showing everyone, gathered together on stage, and it was just crazy the amount of celebrity. You just, you go down, and it's like, oh, is that Will Arnett? Is that Pitbull? Like, it was just such cool.
That was actually
a hodgepodge of people.
Really weird. I think there was a general feeling. We knew Pitbull was going to be there. We knew that Snoop Dogg was going to be there. It was like, and this crowd was 100% Jimmy Buffett fans. Now, kind of thinking, how is Pitbull and Snoop going to go over with this crowd? The fans were nuts, absolutely nuts over it. Snoop Dogg, who had never even seen in concert, never really listened to much of his music.
I don't believe you.
Incredible. Just incredible.
He's awesome. I love him.
What was his role in the Jimmy Buffett tribute concert?
He knew Buffett quite well.
Okay.
As Pitbull did too. All these people, sure. Every name I just mentioned, had close friendships with Buffett. whether it be personal or musical, whatever the case may be.
That what a great testament, because you can be rich and famous and still be a jerk and no one want to show up at, at your funeral or tribute. Obviously, he was not, because look at that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. John Bon Jovi was great. He was like, he goes, you know, we all kind of consider ourselves rock stars, and you kind of behave like rock stars until you meet Jimmy Buffett. Jimmy Buffett shows up to every concert dressed the same way, which is fine. He's a rock star. But what makes him a real rock star is he flies his own plane to the concert. Yeah. That's a rock star.
That's cool. That's cool. Weather. It's unseasonably hot right now.
No question.
Got their ACs on, but not going to last more than a couple of days, right?
Yeah. Tomorrow is still a warm day, 82, little cooler Wednesday, little cooler Thursday, but it's still quite warm. And then a little cooler on Friday. So it's kind of a gradual pull down. Nothing much going on tonight other than the evening is going to be beautiful. Might be a spot shower, a thunder shower overnight. Not really impressed with anything tonight. Only 65 for the low. Tomorrow, a real changeable sky, a mix of clouds and sunshine, a very windy day, some wind gusts of 40 miles per hour. During the afternoon on Tuesday, probably after 2 or 3 o'clock, scattered showers and thunderstorms will be developing. Still a lot of questions of, will some of these storms go strong or severe? At this stage of the game, it's a toss. It's a coin toss. So we have to really pay attention to the weather tomorrow. 82 for the high. Any shower, thunderstorm activity ends fairly early in the evening, and then sunny skies back on Wednesday, but still windy, 78. Thursday, partly sunny, 75, maybe a spot thunderstorm, and some scattered thunderstorms around Friday, and temperatures about 65 degrees. So tomorrow afternoon, it's kind of a typical thunderstorm situation. We have to kind of see if the atmosphere is going to turn over and do its thing. So we have to play it kind of hour by hour.
And Wheels, for Cardinals purposes, are we out of town this week?
Yeah, they're in Oakland for the next 3 days. So
So no big deal.
Yep.
Okay, very good. Headlines, Rach?
Brought to you by Schnucks. Find hundreds of exclusive digital offers and coupons with the Schnucks Rewards app. Okay, as we know, it's tax day, and the IRS says they have improved their customer service. Their customer service tools have cut the average call time down to just 3 minutes compared to 28 minutes 2 years ago. So if you waited to the last second to do your taxes and you're calling in now, you shouldn't have to wait too much. It's also the first year that the IRS has offered free direct e-file at irs.gov.
Wow, what folks, great guys.
You have until midnight.
Making it easier to get your money back.
How amazing they are.
Yeah. Have you guys done your taxes this year?
Yeah.
I filed them this weekend. Longest I've ever waited.
Thank God for my wife, because she's smart and does all this stuff in advance.
She does mine too. Yeah.
Well, aren't we all?
Hey, listen.
Have you not done yours yet, Andrew?
I have not done mine yet, and I suspect I will not do them by midnight, so it'll be fine.
He's going to live dangerously.
It'll be fine.
They're calling you right now, Andrew.
Yeah, you just say it's on the radio. They're going to be like, well, let's look into this Andrew guy.
I'll do it eventually.
A stretch of palindrome dates is coming. I couldn't remember what a palindrome was during Halfwits on Friday, but I said onomatopoeia because the pressure was on and I couldn't
figure
it out.
What is onomatopoia?
I think that's when things sound like what
the
they
same
are.
Sounds.
Like boom.
Oh, is that what that is?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, you're right. I'm thinking of alliteration.
Onomatopoeia is.
I forgot all these damn words.
Like boom is an onomatopoeia. Like when you'd see written down in a cartoon, bang.
Because that's what it, it's supposed to be the word that sounds like what it is.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like fart.
Precisely. PHT, PHP, PHT, BBT.
You just got to get to my level.
Yeah. Right.
Starting on April 20th, the date will read as a palindrome 4/20/24 all the way through 4/29/24. And the Farmer's Almanac considers palindrome dates to be lucky.
Yeah, good.
So we have some good luck coming up, apparently. Ooh. Samsung has overtaken Apple as the top phone maker. The tech giant holds the top spot with a 20.8% market share. That's according to research firm IDC. It's partly due to the release of the Galaxy 24 at the start of the year. Man, I remember when I was selling Galaxy 3s and 4s in Radio Shack back in the day. Now they have 24 of these guys.
I'm such a, I've been so indoctrinated into Apple. And I have no skills at all, but I can work an iPad. I can work my iPhone. It would take so much to get me. They could be so mean to me, and I would still be afraid to to switch teams.
I mean, convenience matters.
Yeah.
You'd be able to figure it out. But that is, you know, that's what Apple did, is they wanted to create something that everyone text could bubble. Use.
Yes, I would. Yeah.
Yeah, you'd be messing up our group chat.
Ooh, that made me so mad.
TV viewers and gamers prefer old content. This is according to a Nielsen report. Most viewers' streaming time in 2023 was spent watching older shows that debuted years prior.
Hmm.
Do you think that's people that did not watch them in real time? Or people, because I've gone back and watched, I just went back and watched The Sopranos, for example. It's hard to believe that was 20 years ago.
Going back.
Yeah.
I keep hearing from people like The Wire and Sopranos.
Yeah, they're so good.
Tons of those old shows.
Yeah. There's tons of good new ones, though.
Yeah. Almost too much.
There's something to be said, though, about, you know, like The Sopranos have stood the test of time and everyone tells you it's good. So if you're going to commit to a show, it's like, well, I might as well go watch something that millions of people are telling me is great rather than like we've been watching Shogun, but I'm behind on it. And it's literally just because it's just such an endeavor to take in new content. You have to be watching. You have to be paying attention.
Yeah.
If you rewatch an old episode of The Simpsons, you can be on your phone the whole time.
I've become such a big fan of passive watching.
Really?
Same here.
Which I'm sure is unhealthy in some way. But Nick has been into Top Chef forever. And I finally started watching Top Chef. And the great thing about it is I don't give a rat's ass. I don't care. I don't care whether your pot roast is good or bad. But I care enough that when I look up from whatever other screen I'm looking at, I can watch it. But then if I have to go to the bathroom, I don't pause it. Does that make sense?
It does make sense.
Yeah.
Low pressure
situation. Those are pure gold.
What I'm always seeking, though, are shows will make me not do that.
What's that?
I'm always seeking shows that will make me not want to reach for my phone.
Well,
right. Like the good ones, I don't do it. But the ones that I'm like, right, I'm like semi in on it or whatever. That's when I'm like checking scores.
See,
or
that's
whatever.
Why I've watched the opening episode of Breaking Bad 3 times and 3 times I've not watched the next one. And all 3 times it's because, and this is going to sound crazy, but it was, this is way too good. And there's something in my life where I can't commit to this much time. And I know that if I start this thing, I know that's exactly why you watch things.
Because they're good.
Because they're good. But I just like, no. No, Breaking Bad. You can't have me now.
It is something. I can see what you mean when it comes to like, okay, there's 5 seasons of this show and you've got 50 episodes that you'd have to watch to really experience it as opposed to a movie.
Right. Especially a bad one I've seen before.
You can do TikTok during that.
Mm-hmm.
Tesla is going to lay off more than 10% of its global workforce. This is according to a memo sent to employees by CEO Elon Musk.
Starting to think he's not that smart.
Yep. Starting to think.
Starting to think.
He's being deposed.
He was born rich and
he's being deposed for something right now. I'm not entirely sure what, but the transcripts have been a lot of fun to read online.
I saw that where he said I should keep my mouth shut because I'm a lot of self-inflicted wounds.
Well, the lawyers are all fighting with each other the whole time, which is very funny. And he just starts saying stuff, and the prosecution lawyer is can't just talk in the middle of being a witness.
Dave, you'll get this. You've lived a life well lived. When people want to make money so that they can live exactly the life they want, he's the first or second richest guy in the world. If he wanted to, he could make all this stuff go away, even if he gave away half his fortune to do it. And then he could go do what he wants to do, which tells me this is what he wants
to
do.
Yes.
I think you're right.
What we've never accounted for when we think of getting super rich and being able to live the life, we think the Jimmy Buffett son of a sailor life, to take it back a bit.
Right.
Going out on a boat and just seeing the world. We've never accounted for what if the thing that you want is really stupid.
Yeah.
Or if what you really want is just constant attention and power.
Yeah.
And finally, there's a Chris Farley film in the works.
Yeah.
Paul Walter Hauser will play the late comedian.
Oh, I like him.
The family of Chris Farley is cooperating with the project.
Well, that makes it better.
I guess.
Yeah.
And he's good, though. That actor's good.
Yeah, but...
Yeah. I'm with you.
It's going to be an adaptation of the Chris Farley Show, a biography in 3 acts, which I have read, and it's a great book.
Yeah.
It is going to be hard to recreate who Chris Farley was. But it'll be interesting to see.
The hard part is if you go too much in on Chris Farley, the character, like his on-screen stuff, as opposed to just letting us see what the world looked like to him, like how he experienced the world.
True. Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.
All right.